on Pilot TV this week, we are tickling the ivories with Will Sharp and Paul Bettany in Amadeus on Sky Atlantic, dishing out some justice to evil exes in The Revenge Club on Paramount Plus. And Martin Compson, who is in that show, will be with us on this show as well to talk about that a little bit later on. We're also exploring the case of a missing daughter and a reluctant hotelier alongside Danny Minogue in Imposter on Channel 5. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your central guide to every show that matters. Christmas is in the air this week, which is very exciting as we embark on... This is the penultimate regular episode of the podcast this year. So very, very exciting. So to that end, I'm joined by my two festive co-pilots, Boyd Ho-Ho Hilton, over here. Hello, Boyd.
Hi. Hotelier?
Yeah,
a hotelier. I think hotelier.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, picking James up. Yeah.
What would you say? Would you say hotelier or hotelier?
In this scenario, I think
you're going along sommelier, yeah, so that's why you're...
Sommelier, hotelier.
Yeah, it's different.
Hotelier.
So yeah. I think sommelier is two L's maybe?
I was just trying to give it a little bit of a French flourish.
Of course you were, yeah.
No, a bit of showmanship.
It's not often he gets picked up on his pronunciation. I'm just enjoying this moment because usually it's me who's messing up words.
Okay, should we just go with hoteller?
Yeah,
that sounds proper earthy, doesn't it?
The owner of a hotel.
The owner of a hotel. Or motel, actually, in this case. So she's a motelier.
Indeed.
Is it a motel? Oh, anyway, let's...
Anyway,
details.
And we're also joined by K-Roll of the Bells. I'm still working on that one, but it's festive.
I thought you were going to go Roll of the Bellends. I was like,
K-Roll of the Bellends. Yes, that would have been better. I should have thought of that.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
But... We'll workshop it. We've got another week till Christmas. We have time to workshop that gag. Before we do, though... As is tradition, should we talk about what we've been watching? And I'm going to go with Kate.
Okay, so I have been watching just a couple of things this week because I've been watching a lot of festive stuff, but I thought I'd save that for next week when we're getting closer to the big day.
Fair.
So instead, I'll tell you about two things. One of which isn't really a pilot show, but I'll just mention it's Accidental Tourist, which I can't remember if I've discussed already. I have a feeling I have.
Oh, yeah, I think you did.
Okay, in which case,
mention it again.
I'll whip through it because for anyone who likes an idiot abroad, this is sort of like a spin on it with Anton Deck, whereby they send their friend and colleague, Stephen Mulhern. I have definitely spoken
about this. You're saying they ripped off the format, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying
Sounds like that's what she's saying.
Yeah, because the way you described it then was almost as if it's an official adaptation.
But no, they're paying homage, certainly, because it's very simple. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're sending Stephen Mulhern, aka Mullers, off to South Korea. Now, this is a man who doesn't like to go anywhere else that isn't, say, Benidorm or Disneyland. He eats the same foods. He doesn't like new people. In fact, is he James? No, he's not James. He is very much a man in his own right. And he goes because he wants to expand his horizons, broaden his horizons, and also, you know, let go of some of his fears, like heights and needles and, you know, all kinds of stuff. He's never been in the sea, James, if you will.
Okay.
So anyway.
I've been in the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Well done.
And they basically send him there and they get him to do loads of things that are going to get him out of his comfort zone, which he does. To his credit, he does. And it's obviously very amusing. But also, it's very touching because he genuinely is changed by the whole experience. And so, yeah, it's a heartwarming watch. But that's just me repeating something I said before because it's all coming back to me.
Good. I'm glad we're able to do this timely recap. In case people didn't listen to the previous time you talked about it.
I'm doing the recap purely for you, actually.
I wasn't listening then. And if I'm absolutely honest with you,
Gabe. Always be honest.
Didn't really listen to you now.
I know.
You know. You can tell me again next week.
It's all very much of a muchness, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Anyway, something that I am wanting people to watch because it's really good is Hercules the Bear Love Story. And that's on BBC iPlayer from both of those shows, by the way, available on the 14th of December.
Yeah.
So I don't know, have either of you heard of this story of Andy and Maggie Robin, who were a Scottish couple who brought up a bear, a grizzly bear, as their own?
Well, I have, only because you told me.
Yeah, okay, well...
On last week's podcast, or...?
IRL, you've told me about this case study.
Indeed, because I interviewed Maggie Robin for The Telegraph.
And the bear?
Last week. No, the bear is RIP, as is Andy. But anyway, it's...
Are the two things connected?
No, they're not.
Okay.
Because Hercules the Bear never harmed anyone, and he was bought for £50 from a park, Andy was a wrestler who had once taken on a challenge to wrestle a black bear in Toronto called Terrible Ted for $1,000. And after that, he just had a fascination with bears. And so when they were married, turned to Maggie and said, look, I want to get a bear cub. How do you feel? And she's like, yeah, fabulous. So they brought up this bear in rural Scotland, was a Scottish celebrity until he went missing in the Outer Hebrides and then became a global sensation. And he was in Octopussy. He had a presidential telegram from Ronald Reagan, and just became this massive, huge star. And it's a stranger than fiction tale. The documentary is really heartwarming. I mean, obviously now questions would be raised. Can you?
A little bit, yeah.
His diet, James, is very similar to yours. I mean, he would have
mainly chocolate,
Coca-Cola,
the occasional Toblerone.
He would, you know, love sausages, beans. It wasn't a very, like, shall we say, it wasn't rich in fruit and vegetables that
I could see from the documentary. Didn't have his five a day.
He didn't have his five a day. He also was quite partial to a baby sham. Anyway, I'll leave it there.
Right.
So I would recommend that for listeners. If you're in the market for a documentary, check it out. Hercules the Bear, a love story on BBC iPlayer.
Okay. Mm. Boydie.
I've been watching various things at various events that I've been to this week.
That's cryptic.
Yeah, well, I'm about to explain.
Oh, I see. I'm teasing it. Right, okay.
Give him a second.
Yeah, sorry. Exactly. Just keep
trampling all over your own showmanship today.
Unbelievable. So, for example, on Tuesday, I went to a Prime Video screening.
Prime Video screening
of the new Paul McCartney documentary, Man on the Run.
Which you wanted to go on your birthday.
You did. Was that your birthday treat?
That was my birthday, yeah.
What was your birthday treat?
No, but we were all involved in this saga of, would he get invited? Yeah. Would he get invited?
Because you were on the wait list last time we spoke.
Oh, no. I was definitely always invited to this event. I wasn't on the wait. So the only question was whether Macca himself would show up.
And sing you happy birthday.
Did he?
He neither turned up nor sang happy birthday.
That's disappointing.
But it was still a great time was had because they had champagne reception, you know. So
you
I
know
basically,
how you love champagne.
In my head, I turned it into about Prime Video's throwing a birthday party for me, in which they happened to show 2 hour Paul McCartney.
It's your perfect evening.
Yeah. Now, the documentary is heavily embargoed because it's not coming out on Prime Video until February, I think, 2026.
Are you even allowed to say you've seen it, Boydo?
I think I'm allowed, yeah. I mean, we're allowed to say we've seen it, yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure. But it was, it was great. I had a great time. I had a great time. Because I am obsessed with Paul McCartney.
And that's fine for you to say, because while the show is embargoed, you yourself are not embargoed.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I have not embargoed myself.
Indeed.
Yeah. So me and my friend Doug, both Paul McCartney obsessives, had a brilliant time. It was just brilliant timing for me personally. It was like, you know, we're giving you this 2 hour documentary and a champagne reception happens to be on my birthday.
Oh.
So that was great.
Congratulations. Did you have a lovely day?
Yeah, very, very chilled. Yeah, nothing. It was all, you know, build up to the
McCartney.
Big McCartney event. So that was good. The event can't either confirm nor deny.
The event
was
good. Tripping himself up.
The
today.
Snacks were good. He enjoyed the champagne. That's all we're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Last night I actually went to see. It's a film, but I did hang out with Timothy Chalamet last night.
Oh, I saw your story.
Marty Supreme. Did you challenge him to a game of ping pong?
I didn't have time to do that, no. But I was merely feet away from the great man.
Now, was his jacket supreme?
Do you know what? Part of me thought it might have been. I don't think it was. I don't think it was.
The ultimate
did you
coder.
Go? Did you go up to him and say, "I'm Boydie Supreme"?
I did.
And so that's
it was tempted.
Thematically appropriate.
I think the subtly deployed security guards at the place where the screening took place would have accosted me if I'd have gone anywhere near him, to be honest.
Fair.
But it was, it's for film, so I won't bang on about it, but it is a brilliant film. It's definitely one of the best films. Have you seen it yet?
I have not. I've not been able to make any of the screenings. There is one more, and I'm not going to be able to make that either.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's very disappointing.
Priorities.
I shall have to go to the actual cinema and see it.
Yeah. But he's really good fun, Timothy Chalamet, like in the Q&A mode. Shall we say? But it is a 2.5 hour film about ping pong, essentially. Kay,
I love a bit of ping pong. So
yeah, I mean, and there's more to it than that, obviously. I Love LA. I've been banging on about I Love LA almost as much as you banging on about that thing with Stephen Mulhern.
very similar, I'm sure.
Very similar, but in this case. I think it's now, we're compiling our top 20s soon, aren't we, for the next big...
Lord of mercy, yes,
we are. Both of you have already had your top 20s requested.
Yes, or when's the deadline?
That's past, boy. It's past.
I'm saying after the weekend.
Does that mean...
I haven't got time for that.
If the deadline's passed, does that mean it's just going to be James' top 20?
So because the deadline's passed, your votes are no longer eligible.
I still vote for you, just mine. And then me sprinkling my magic on top, but anyway.
Right.
Is that what you call it?
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So sprinkling. Kay is unwilling to provide a list for the record. You heard it here, listeners.
No, this happened last year. Yeah. I provide a list of, not 20, and then I just say, these ones are ones I'd like to see reflected in the list.
Here are some terrible shows that I would like included in the list.
It's gone there. Anyway, I Love LA is a big contender for me. I really liked it to begin with. We didn't review it because of reasons and screeners and I think it was a busy week, etc. But it's really, really good. It's
remind me, is this Sky?
Yeah, Sky Comedy.
Yeah, but Boydie did warn me off this show and said I would not survive it.
Well, the clue was in the channel, to be fair. Sky Comedy.
I mean, it is comedy.
It's comedy, you're not going to like it.
It is Sky Cringe Comedy, though. They might as well have a whole channel devoted to cringe comedy.
Oh, is it like the Chair Company levels?
The Chair Company is just weird. The cringe of the Chair... I mean, that's another contender, I have to say, having finished it now. And the Chair Company is like an epic of insanity, comedic insanity. It's really bizarre and weird. Whereas I Love LA isn't really weird. It is cringe, though. It's definitely 100%. Almost every comedic twist or turn is basically because it's so awfully embarrassing for someone. It's some of it, although having said that, the more I think about it, the more it's kind of like you one is cringing at watching these people, but they don't give a shit. They're all like absolutely having a great time. All the people involved, all the characters involved, the mad LA types that are depicted in the show. But it is borderline unbearable sometimes, but in a brilliant way. But I think it's out and out funny. That's the thing about it. It's kind of it's really funny.
I'm going to give that a go.
Yeah, I think you would like it. Having a more open mind than some...
I mean, it's not hard,
no,
to be fair.
Someone could say. And then I've watched this new show called Can You Keep a Secret, which is a big new BBC comedy, which maybe we'll be reviewing. But I'm interviewing Mark Heap and Dawn French this very afternoon.
That's very exciting.
Dawn French, absolute legend. Mark Heap, legend as well, for Friday Night Dinners, etc. The Neighbour, remember?
Jim
with the dog.
The Neighbour.
Yeah.
It's delightful.
I'm interviewing those, and it's a really interesting show as well. It's about what would happen if you decided to fake. They're a married couple, and they fake his death in order to win loads of insurance money. It's like, and then it all spins off from there. How can you keep this thing going? this huge lie going. So yeah, that's interesting, and that'd be arriving, I think, in the new year.
But I'll be excited for that. Yeah.
So and finally, nearly finished, obviously. Finally, what a great thing dropped into my Netflix inbox today, just today. Agatha Christie's Seven Dials.
What?
Yes.
It hasn't dropped in my bloody box.
Because some people might think there hasn't been an Agatha Christie Christmas series this year. There isn't one this year. Usually, often the BBC has like a two or three parter around this time, often shown in that gap, often done by Phelpsy. I think she's worked on a new one, hasn't she, anyway, which will arrive soon. But this is Netflix's dipping its toe into the Agatha Christie waters. And it's got a great cast, Mia McKenna-Bruce, Helena Bonham Carter, Martin Freeman, Edward Blumel, Nabal Rizwan,
big guns,
friend of the podcast. And it's all there. I'm very excited. And it's show run by Chris Chibnall of One Time Doctor Who showrunner fame. So for me, this is what I need. I need a big back of the Christie.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't started.
I'm desperate. And when does it drop?
In January, middle of January.
Yeah, you'd think they'd drop it in December. Weird. Okay.
I think it feels like a Christmas. They've got enough in December. Think Stranger Things.
Why didn't they do it? It's a mystery.
And there you go. Yeah, and that.
I need to see it. Okay. I'm excited about that. I'll put it in my calendar.
Good.
Yeah. James, what have you been watching?
Mine's going to be very brief. I watched the rest of Pluribus. I have finished Pluribus. But obviously, the finale
satisfied?
Has not aired. I was satisfied.
Good.
But obviously, everything is embargoed, so I cannot discuss anything about the finale. But that was, gave me cause for smugness, which is always appreciated. And the other thing I have finished is, which I think will, by the time we go out, the finale will have aired, It, Welcome to Derry. I've watched the finale of that as well. And the reason I watched that is because we did a special. It was a sponsored podcast, but it's a sponsored spoiler special. So we did a spoiler special, me and Chris and Helen, for It Welcome to Derry.
Why don't we get sponsored spoiler specials?
Well, it's going up in the pilot feed as well. So it's going up in the pilot feed. And when I say the pilot feed, I mean the regular pilot feed, this feed, not the Pilot Plus feed. So it actually is going on the regular Empire feed, despite being a spoiler special, and the regular pilot feed as well, despite being a spoiler special. So it's a very special spoiler special in that it's available to everyone.
Congrats on saying that in one
Thank
go.
You. Thank you very much.
Real
That's good.
Real tongue twister. Yeah. What a Christmas treat for listeners as well, to be able to access it.
Indeed, indeed. We are the podcast that keeps on giving.
Yeah, indeed.
That's all I have. They're the only things I've been watching.
That has... The It.
The It.
The It has been, I've noticed, in quite a few people's best of the year list. So it must be something...
It will not be in mine.
Oh.
As a spoiler for the review of this special.
It could have kept us, you know, on tantalising...
Where's your mystique? Come on.
Sorry.
Where's your mystique?
Oh, God, like, what's happening? No, I there's a lot about it I like. Mm. There are a couple of things about it I don't like. But broadly speaking, my feelings around it are positive. Like, I've enjoyed it. But I don't think it's going to make my top 10.
Okay, in that case, I won't bother watching the rest
of
it.
But will it make my top 20? That's the question. Oh. Maybe. Who knows?
I mean, we know.
No, you don't.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have a list, so you don't get to say.
Yet.
Yet.
I'll see. I'll turn my attention to it at some point.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Excellent. Right. Shall we have a listener question before we move on?
Yes, let's. Now, this one is specific to Mr. Boyd Hilton. And it is a... Did you groan? Was that a groan?
Yeah. Because
it was disgruntlement.
Generally, that implies a complaint, doesn't it?
Oh, but this is not a complaint.
Oh, okay.
This is a request.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
It's a question rather than a complaint.
Yes. Go ahead, listener.
Fine. It's from Andrew, who says, "Hi, guys. Please can I get Boyd to channel his mystic Meg and tell me what's on Christmas Day and at what times?"
I mean...
Andrew very much feels like my kind of guy, because I usually just text Boyd and be like, Boyd, just, you know... Yeah. It's a boogle, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's less of a mystic Meg than a festive Radio Times, but sure, whichever you like.
Other festive TV listings magazines are available.
Yes.
Some of which are published by Bauer, James,
sure.
as well.
Well, okay.
Total
in,
TV
okay,
Guide,
in truth,
I draw your attention
this is
to.
The message read like this, but I was avoiding reading it because I understand, you know, that we do have TV titles at Bauer, but Andrew actually said, "Hey guys, because I can't afford to buy the Radio Times anymore, too political, James, can Boyd please channel his Mystic Meg and tell me what's on at Christmas?"
Well, you might be able to afford Total TV Guide. It could be cheaper than Radio Times. I don't know. I haven't checked.
Are you getting a bonus or what? What's going on?
I just feel it's important to point out there are
other TV listings magazines are available. But, also, the internet.
Well, the internet less so, but yeah, the internet as well.
Distill it, Boyd.
So he wants to know what to watch on Christmas Day.
Yeah,
is that
yes. yeah. So we want you to curate an entire day's
this
viewing.
This is actually quite helpful for me as well, to be
beginning
fair.
At 6 a.m. on Christmas morning.
6 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. Look, set the scene. Set the scene. Andrew's woken up.
Okay. Fine.
He's felt all the bumps in his Christmas stocking. He's taken all the little presents out. He's found the lump of coal in the toe, and you know he's unwrapped everything else. It's quite early because he was very excited, and now he wants to watch the telly.
I don't think you need to get to Andrew's excitement level.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Andrew wanders downstairs by candlelight, probably in his slippers with a dressing gown on, puts on his smoking jacket, sits in his armchair, turns on the TV. Boydie, what does he
You're
watch?
You're making him sound like Lord Grantham.
Or Noel Coward. Yes, one of the other.
I think he watches Ghosts on BBC Two at 6 a.m. with My Life at Christmas, in which Anita Rani interviews Dame Floella Benjamin.
Legend.
Yeah, there you go. Then from 7 a.m. through till about lunchtime, ITV pulls out the stops for its Christmas versions of its various magazine shows. So Good Morning Britain, Lorraine, and This Morning will all have festive specials.
All Boyd's favourites.
All my favourites, yeah. They'll be well worth checking into. Then,
around lunchtime, what we do?
Around lunchtime, I think we're looking at probably...
Don't say we have to talk to friends and family. Come on.
Oh. God.
No, he's eating his turkey on a tray in front of the telly. We've already established this, right?
Yeah.
Don't try and make Andrew socialise on Christmas Day. He doesn't want to do it.
Okay. There's various, like, Wallace and Gromit. So there's Vengeance Most Foul, the Wallace and Gromit film on 11:40.
With the gnomes.
Yeah, which is very funny. And the BBC One's showing Matilda at 1 o'clock. So if you, it's kind of lunchtime, film time, really.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, that's quite good. Then you've got over on ITV, they're showing Raiders of the Lost Ark at 3:10.
Yes.
The King's speech is at 3 o'clock, everyone. So everything stops for the King's speech.
Even Indy, apparently.
Even Indy, yeah. So you've got choice. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Frozen 2, Evil Under the Sun. These are all films that are on. But it's all billed up to 3:35 on BBC One, which is the Gladiator Celebrity Special.
Which, guys, I've seen. That was on my list. That I'll discuss next week.
Okay. Well, you'll know then that it features Joe Wicks, Nicola Adams, Sam Thompson, Bauer yes. Radio, Sam Thompson.
And Vogue Williams.
And Vogue Williams, yeah. With Bradley and Barney Walsh. I imagine James, have you ever seen
I would love to see James do the Gladiators, specifically The Eliminator.
In my life, never watched Gladiators. You'll be shocked to hear.
I think as a kid you might have enjoyed it, anyway.
Then Shaun of the Sheep special on BBC.
Shaun off the Sheep?
Shaun off the Sheep. Shaun off the Sheep, which is merely 10 minutes long, but is the reason why, if you have plumped for the Radio Times over other TV magazines...
For whatever reason.
On the cover, they've got Shaun the Sheep, etc.
And Gromit.
A great cover by our friend Mark Taylor.
Cracking cover.
There you go. So that's on at 4.35. 4.45 is a special for the weakest link with our friend Ramesh Ranganathan.
Okay,
on
good.
BBC One. Now, it's basically BBC One from here on in, I have to say, mostly, because you got the weakest link, Strictly Special K. You may have seen that already.
Yeah, 5:30. Which, as fans know, that's Strictly Light, but sure. It's the last time I think we'll see Claudia and Tess on screen as hosts, right?
Of this show, Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that's historic. Then you've got Michael McIntyre's Christmas Wheel at 6:45.
Especially for Boydo.
Especially for me, in which among the guests are Gavin and Stacey's Matthew Horne and Joanna Page.
Hmm.
Giles Brandreth, Richard Osman, Mel Giedroyc, Paddy McGuinness, star-studded, James. You'll love it. Then it's kind of soap time, really.
No.
If you want to avoid soap, yes. Soap around 7:30, 7:45, then you could go over to the Great Christmas Bake Off. Actually, this Christmas Bake Off.
Wait. Have you covered off EastEnders? What time's EastEnders on?
Well, we don't care. 7:45.
We do care.
We really don't.
We don't.
Anyway.
Some of the greatest writers started on that, so you're...
Oh, don't
wheel
out the summer grace.
Oh, you see what she's done there, Brody. Yeah. You see what she did there.
I think
by the way, I think you're confusing EastEnders with Coronation Street. Some of the best writers started on Coronation Street. Anyway.
What, Sarah Phelps was on EastEnders?
No. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Well, yeah. Snobs.
All right. But at 8 o'clock on Channel 4, this is the big Channel 4.
Look, Boydie, I just need to know when Mrs. Brown's Boys is on. And if you're not going to tell me that, I don't want to hear it.
Oh, I am going to tell you that. I can tell you that right now.
He's working his way through.
Yeah, 10:15.
Okay, fine.
There you go.
Sorry, go back to it.
But the Great Christmas Bake Off this year is a Peep Show special, James.
Also seen it.
Connected to the sitcom or just a bit sexy?
Connected to the sitcom.
Right.
A reunion.
So it's a reunion with Izzy Sooty, Olivia Colman, David Mitchell, Sophie Winkleman and Matt King all competing in a baking fest.
I will be discussing it next week, but this is a very good episode.
Will they be making Christmas puddings?
No. But are there festive treats?
Then I would say Bullseye with Freddie Flintoff on ITV 8:15.
Love a bit of Freddie on Christmas Day.
Then I would say 9:15, Amandaland, which we will be reviewing, yeah. I think.
Yes, in our Christmas Day Pilot Plus.
Christmas Day
Pilot
Plus.
Comes out on Christmas morning. Santa will hand deliver it on Christmas morning. Yeah. Very exciting.
Because you've all been bad and naughty. This is what you're getting.
And this is what you're
return.
Getting in your stocking. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah. That's at 9:15 on BBC One. Then you've got EastEnders at 9:45. There's two EastEnders episodes, by the way, Kay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then over on ITV at 10:15, Ramesh Ranganathan's Parents Evening Special.
Got a day of...
Yeah.
I think decent TV, good TV to avoid any bust-ups in your family. You can just take yourself off and watch any of those delightful treats.
There is literally nothing on that list I would want to watch with the exception of Amandaland.
Well, there is a Jaws at 50 documentary on BBC Two at 11:15. Well,
maybe
you could watch that.
Well, as you
but
know,
but you say you don't watch TV anyway.
That's what I was going to say. As you know, I do not watch TV at any point on Christmas Day.
Mm. At any point.
At any point. It is a Christmas.
Too busy with charades.
It is in many ways the only day of the year for me that is TV free. So I'm the opposite of almost everyone else.
Listen, give your eyeballs a rest.
That's it. Yeah, I might read a book.
I mean, that's the opposite of giving your eyeballs a rest. But yeah. Sure. Charades, I think. I can see you doing charades.
more of a Pictionary man. But yeah, okay.
So that's it, really. I'd say that, yeah.
I think that's a fulsome reply for Andrew, who I like more because I just realised he said, P.S., Indian Summer summer was great. So
oh, yeah,
a man of
favorite.
Good taste.
But all I would say is, among all of that, really, the best thing for me is Amandaland, which you will be reviewing, as I say.
Did you just spoil Amandaland?
In what way?
You just said it was the best thing on Christmas Day, thereby, I'm sure,
in
breaking
theory.
At least six embargoes.
In theory, it's the best.
That's the thing he's most looking forward to.
I yes. see.
Thanks.
That's a good recovery there, Boydie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
good
welcome.
Recovery. Mm. Yeah. No, absolutely, that's the thing I'm most looking forward to.
Jennifer
Saunders
so.
Is in it as her aunt, and so it's an advert reunion as well with Joe Lum.
Who doesn't want that?
Who doesn't want that, indeed? Mm. Okay. Andrew, I hope we've... somehow help to curate your Christmas
watching?
I like
watching. The idea of Andrew just making a note of all these times.
Yeah, he's been taking notes. He's been writing all this down. This is like
better be.
According to you, a quill.
Right, this is 100% compulsory now. Like, he has to watch everything that Boydie read out.
And we want feedback,
otherwise, it's just
Andrew.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, otherwise it's been a big old gigantic waste of Boyd's time.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Like this actual episode, to be fair.
If you would like Boydie to curate any other day of the year for you, do feel free to send in your request to pilottv@empiremagazine.com.
Subject heading, it's a boogle.
Sure, it's a boogle. Oh my God. Right, okay. What happens next on this absolute shambles that is a podcast? We should probably have some kind of guest, and it's lucky for us that this week's guest is Martin Compston, the excellent Martin Compston, who took time out from what I can only assume is Kay walking away across the room, forgetting that there are cameras on.
Oh my God!
Brilliant.
And doing some kind of random exploration of the studio. Kay, what are you doing?
Oh my God, where are they?
I mean, you're off camera at the moment because you're standing in between them.
Amazing.
But people obviously did see you get up and walk away.
I'm so sorry.
What are you looking for?
I dropped a very valuable earring. And
right.
Just like,
and it rolled away.
And if I don't pick it up now, I'll forget it.
No, that's fair.
It'll be awful.
Hey,
sorry.
Look, Kay's back.
God, I forgot. Sorry, everyone. These bloody cameras.
Oh, these cameras. They'll be the death of you.
Yeah, it'll be
What was I saying? Martin Compston, that's it. He's our guest this week. And he's in a new thriller on Paramount Plus, of course, The Revenge Club. And this is based on J.D. Pennington's book. And he took time out of his prep for the new series of...
Red Eye.
No. Line of Duty.
He doesn't need to do prep for Red Eye because it's already in the can.
He needs to get in the headspace to be Steve Armour, and that's what I think he was doing.
He needs to get his waistcoat
on. And he took time out to speak to us. And we're going to talk about The Revenge Club a little bit later on, where he plays part of a support group for the recently divorced, a group that decides to take righteous vengeance on the spouses who wronged them. And who doesn't want to do that? So here is Martin talking to Jordan King.
It is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast one of the stars of Paramount Plus's The Revenge Club and one of the busiest men working in TV right now, Mr. Martin Compston. How are you today?
I'm not too bad, pal. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. As someone that has been missing the Restless Natives for the last few months, it's good to hear your voice and see your face.
Thank you. I'm actually meeting Gordon tomorrow. We're planning possibly a wee catch up bonus.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good. But I've been really enjoying The Revenge Club so far. I've seen 4 episodes, and I think one of the things that immediately sort of grabbed me with it is this: you've got this very dark sort of Strangers on a Train meets Horrible Bosses kind of premise. But it's also just really, really fun. Like, you get to the end of one and you want to crack straight on with another. I just thought for yourself, obviously, you're very well known for doing a lot of thrillers, dramas, that kind of thing. Was part of the appeal of this getting to do something that's dark still, but you get to have a little bit of fun with it?
100%, mate. Getting to have a play, you know, and yeah, comedy's not my forte, not really what I'm known. But again, it's just opportunities that come your way. You know, I'm very grateful that I've sort of... the work that's came away the last couple of years has kept me busy. But yeah, when you see that script and you see the chance that you... Because, I mean, comedy can be quite a serious thing, but when you see the cast that's coming aboard, you know, already knew Doogie a bit, Sharon a bit, I'm like, I knew this is going to be a laugh. And the scripts were wonderful. And I don't think you can quite pin it down for what it is, because is it a comedy, is it a drama, is it a murder mystery? And it's bits of all of that. And I think... I don't think there's anything quite like it on TV at the minute, you know. And as you say, it's very, very bingeable. But I genuinely had a blast making it.
Yeah, and I mean, it shows when you're watching it as well, because obviously you're getting to work with this big cast of, you know, there's a lot of funny bones in the cast. You just mentioned fellow countrymen, Dougie Henshall and Sharon Rooney. I did get a bit of a kick out of the fact that you're the only one out of the three of you getting to use your native accent, though.
I know. So I think I probably did better accents than I am, but no, say with Sharon, and also, I mean, Mira Sayal's just, I mean, she's British comedy royalty, you know, with that, and Amy Chenille. It was a great cast. It was the first time, because usually I've been on shows where it'd be like Line of Duty and stuff, and you've got a little tight-knit group of sort of like 2 or 3 of you, but it's the first time I felt like part of like an actor's troupe, you know, like a theatre actor's gang, because it was proper like 6 leads, and then you throw Amit in there for the therapy scenes, and it felt like it was all 7 us in there in the trenches together. And, you know, it can be long days, but when you're all in it together, and it can get a bit like naughty kids, you know, it's... because it was genuinely some of the stuff. I mean, especially Amit when he's playing Malcolm, he's coming in that gold suit and all that kind of stuff. The first time he comes through for that Trust Casino things, I mean, we're all on the deck. It's tough because you know you have to make your days. There's always a time crunch and stuff. But yeah, we definitely had the giggles a few times.
Yeah, well, I mean, it strikes me as well that the sort of the plotting of all of these different revenge plots and everything, it feels, you know, sort of quite intricate and you know, it is like a very well constructed drama in that way. But then the funnier side of it does feel a lot looser, and it feels almost quite improvisational at times as well. So I wonder, did you get a chance to sort of like dip your toe in improv water? Or were you trying to like back away from that a little bit
Tim, especially our first block director, you know, Tim's got sort of impeccable comedy credentials, and he was like, yeah, just try it, you know, the script's there, you know, I think that's, you come over prepared. I think the good thing with improvisation is you've got to know the initial scene so well, because you know where you've got to get back to. It's not just saying a funny line for the sake of it if it's got no relation to the scene. There was moments, I think, because I came a week late and you think they're all in the groove and you're a wee bit tentative. You think, oh, this is a funny line, but you don't quite commit to it. You can see people going like, did you say something there? But once you get, we felt it was a safe space. But I've always felt with improvisation in any kind of walk with it is, I think the problem people have with it or when they're doing it is they always think it has to end in a massive fight and a massive laugh. And sometimes when you've got nothing to say and it's just the awkward silence, if you can just sit in those moments, and Mira's amazing at that, the stillness she has, if you can sit in them, sometimes that the awkwardness of that is the funny things. And you know, like The Office was the master at that. But I really, really enjoyed it. And again, it was just in that you never felt like you tried something and people were sort of looking at you, looking down upon you. Always felt like, yeah, have a go and we'll try something else. It was a safe environment.
Yeah, and I literally was just thinking about it now as you were talking as well. Because obviously, like, I don't immediately think Martin Compston improv, but at the same time, the first thing I ever saw you in was Sweet 16.
16, yeah.
And Ken Loach famously, like, a lot of his process is it's exploration and it's sort of like working around theme and stuff. So yeah. At the same time, like, was that a bit of a return for you? Did you find yourself into a bit of that?
I've always kind of... not so much improv, these things. Like, I've always added bits of my own dialogue to stuff. But again, I think that always comes from great initial writing. You know, that inspires you, you know, because if it's something that's not great, you would just come in and go, right, let's get this done and get out of here. But I feel, again, you have to be over-prepared, because I think the best improvisers, which I think is quite contradictory, are the ones who know the stuff inside out, because then you can throw it away because you know what you've got to get back to in the scene.
You've got to know the rules to break the rules.
Exactly. And I have always felt quite, as she is with my start with Ken Loach, I've always felt quite comfortable improvising. But yes, the comedy improvising is something I haven't done in a long time. Last time I did it was Urban Myths for Sky, and that was great fun. So it was something that was always in my mind that I wanted to get back to. So I'm really grateful for the team for Revenge Club for giving me a shot at it again.
Yeah, and something about sort of I talked about the ensemble, but your character Callum specifically is that because of the way that the show's set up and the structure of it, he's kind of got that onions layers effect of you're seeing him through these different lenses each episode as it passes. I just wondered for you, like, was there a specific moment when you were reading the script or when you did arrive on set where you were like, okay, I know this guy now, like, I get him now?
I mean, there are moments that this job can throw you for a loop sometime. Like, I just came off a job called Red Eye, and on the Friday night I was chasing a Russian spy through a car park in Watford,
as you do,
and then I think on the Sunday I was in a community hall in Dublin trying to convince my daughter that I'm a good dad. And it just, that was a bit, that took me a day to kind of go, all right, get it together. I think it was probably after the kind of second lot of therapy scenes when I felt, the big thing for Calum, I think it was that sometimes you can find a little in and he has a lighter.
I was about to mention the flicking the lighter.
Yeah, the lighter, that kind of became a little, even just as an actor, that became a little safety net for me. You just can find something, you know, and it's a very important thing for him as a character, but also for me, it just kind of felt, if I had nothing to do, I could play with the lighter, you know, and that kind of drew me in. So that, that was something when I came to set each day, like I was all and I've got a scene with Amy where we talk about how it annoys everybody, and I think I was annoying everybody on set with it as well, because you get into a habit of just flicking it, and it is quite annoying, but it's very therapeutic. So when I get to set every day, I'd always ask for my lighter first thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to have to let you go in just a moment, but I obviously couldn't possibly speak to you without mentioning the very recent... I can see the look in your eyes already.
See, I tell you this right now, mate. See, when people stop asking me, it'll be a sad day. Like, I'm lucky that... I think, as you said, you see, with Sweet 16 for me when it happened, it was like a weight around my neck for a while because I felt like I had to get away from that character. But I think Line of Duty, I mean, happening sort of late 20s and into it, it's... I'm proud of it, you know, and if it's the best thing I'm ever known for, like, I can't know if people ever stop asking me about it, then I'd be quite sad. So no, absolutely fine.
Yeah, I mean, if your thing that you're always known for is one of the best British telly dramas that we've ever had, it's not a bad way to be looked back on, is it?
Oh, not at all. But yeah, people always try to get away from it. I'm like, no, that's it. Then I'm chuffed that people like it.
Well, I am very glad to hear that it's coming back, and I am going to have to let you go, but I hope that we get to talk to you again when season 7 does drop. Take care, man. Thanks for your time.
See you later, pal. Bye.
That was Martin Compston. Time now for this week's news. And look, the Golden Globes nominations were announced. Mm. I don't suggest we spend too much time on this, but we should touch on it.
You always say this because you have
it's disdain. It's directed at you.
I have disdain.
Me?
Yes.
Is it directed at Boyd?
No.
Boyd?
Yeah.
My disdain for Boyd?
No. I thought you were trying to stop him from reading out a massive list.
So you're saying Boyd's boring? You think Boyd's boring, and you think that that's what I'm doing here?
Go wash your mouth.
Hey, no, you're the one who accused him. No, that's not what I'm saying.
He has valid disdain.
Yes.
Valid disdain for the Golden Globes, because there are basically like 95 people from Reykjavik or wherever deciding what the best TV and films of the year are. Now, it just so happens, particularly I think in the TV branch, so the Golden Globes is unique among all ceremonies these days in that has TV and film.
It straddles the divide.
Straddles the divide. Yeah. All in one cornucopia of showbiz joy when it's or joy / embarrassment when it arrives on the scene in second week of January or something like that. Anyway,
sure.
But the bottom line is actually the nominations, as so often happens with the Golden Globes, are really good. So, for example,
except for one, but carry on.
Okay, we'll get to that. Oh, in terms of film or TV?
Oh, TV.
Oh, yeah, TV. So we won't do the film, obviously. We'll leave to Empire, The Empire.
Oh, wow, okay.
Legend.
We're going to leave all the film stuff. We're going to skip over all of that.
But, like, best TV series drama.
Yeah.
The Diplomat?
Yes.
Tick.
Favourite. Pluribus?
Yes.
Already, you see? See, Pluribus hasn't even finished yet, season one. It's already on the list for Golden Globe nominations.
Because it's fabulous.
Because it's brilliant. Severance? Can't argue.
Yeah.
Slow Horses.
Yes.
Can't argue. The Pit.
The Pit.
Can't argue.
I mean, for those who've seen it.
Well, I can argue because I haven't bloody seen it.
And The White Lotus.
Yeah.
Now,
nothing to grumble about.
I'm saying that is a list. That underlines what a brilliant year of TV. I've seen some roundups of TV that begin with the thing saying, you know, oh, what a disappointing year for TV. I'm like, you've got right there. You've got six genius shows.
Yeah.
Purely in the drama category.
I'm still going to say Andor or GTFO.
I know, yeah. It's difficult, though.
But to be fair, Diego Luna gets a nomination further down. So,
he does, Comedy, best comedy,
yes.
Abbott Elementary.
Yes.
Yes.
Obviously, The Bear.
Which isn't a comedy, but carry on.
Yeah.
We can't even bother to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we've said so many times.
Yeah.
Hacks, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nobody wants this.
What the fuck?
Yeah,
no, that should not. Shrinking has been on, it's fine.
But crucially, like, that is, they are... They're not doing a weird date thing where they sometimes at the Emmys where actually they're talking about the previous Bear, even though the most recent Bear is there. They are specifically thinking season two of Nobody Wants This, which was fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah.
I mean, I still like it. And The Studio.
Which is genius.
Yes. Okay, fine.
Everyone liked. Limited TV anthology series on motion picture made for television. Adolescence, of course, should win. All Her Fault. In fact, talking of, you know, only literally just gone out, just finished on Sky. Black Mirror. Dying for Sex, your favourite.
Oh, I like that. I really like that. Michelle Williams.
I'm not saying that because of the provocative title. I'm saying you did really like that show.
How dare you? All right.
The Beast in Me. The Maverick Netflix show. And The Girlfriend.
Oh, I enjoyed that. Yeah, Robin Wright.
Yes. Crazy Robin Wright.
Yes.
Crazy. Who's crazier?
Olivia Cooke.
Who's crazy, Robin Wright, Olivia Cooke?
Mm.
So that, I think that's a pretty good list.
That is a good list, yeah.
Then we have best performance by a female actor in a drama. Bella Ramsey, Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
Britt Lower from Severance.
Mm.
Helen Mirren from Mobland, which is Maverick, I have to say.
It was 1923, yeah. Was it not?
I think it's Mobland.
I think she was nominated for 1923.
Ooh, he's going to be right.
Well, I'm actually looking at the official Golden Globes website. I don't know what you're looking at.
Is this where James is going to have to issue another apology?
I will be honest. If she were going to be nominated for either of those, I think 1923 would be a better shout.
But you're factually wrong.
I'm choosing to make an audible call. I'm changing the nomination from Mobland 1923 for the sake of viewers. And I loved Mobland, but also... It was a bit, you know, they're always after me lucky charms, and I don't think, you know...
She did get to swear profusely in Mobland.
She did get to use C-bomb.
And jeffing.
Maybe that's what it was.
I think that is what it was, seriously.
Best C-bomb, yeah. Helen Mirren, Helen Mobland. Mirren,
yeah, calling everyone the C-word.
All right, fair enough.
That's what you want. Kathy Bates for Matlock.
Yeah.
Kerry Russell, our favourite for The Diplomat.
Yes.
Well, my favourite.
Oh, no, I love her.
Perhaps even more of our favourite, Ray Seymour.
Ray Seymour.
Friend of the pod.
Mm.
She came into the studio.
Friend of the pod. Absolute friend of the pod.
Then you've got men in drama, as I'm calling it now.
Yes,
Adam
men in
Scott,
drama.
Severance. Diego Luna Andor.
Yes, come on, Diego.
Gary Oldman, mm-hmm. Slow Horses. Mark Ruffalo for Task.
Yeah.
Also friend of the pod.
Brilliant performance.
Noah Wiley for The Pit.
Yes.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows?
I mean,
who can say? And Sterling Brown for Paradise.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is pretty good, I think. Should I go through the comedy and musical acting nominations?
Oh, comedy. Can you just do comedy, but can you talk really quickly?
Thanks. Female actor in a musical comedy, Aya Adebiri for The Bear.
Yes.
Jean Smart for Hacks. Jenna Ortega for Wednesday. Kristen Bell for Nobody Wants This. Natasha Lyonne for Poker Face. Selena Gomez for Only Murders in the Building.
Okay, Smart. Carry on. Is there male as well?
Yes.
Sense of completion?
Men. Adam Brody. Your favourite?
Yeah, I like him.
Glenn Powell for Chad Powers, which is fucking insane. Jeremy Allen White for The Bear. Martin Short for Only Murders. Seth Rogen for The Studio. Martin for Only Murders.
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen wins
Has
that.
Has to win, yeah.
And women in sporting roles.
Is
on
this a joke? No, I can't work it out.
No, it's called female actor.
This pod is best sponsored by Boyd reading stuff out.
Once you start, you've got to
finish.
Started
by Andrew.
Best performance by a female actor in sporting role. Just mention this for Amy Lee Woods, because Amy Lee Woods is on for The White Lotus, which is brilliant. Carrie Coon, et cetera. The White Parker Posey, also nominated.
Papa, no!
Yeah, oh my God. Wow. it was worth it just for that. I think, yeah.
Is that it? Boys run out of steam. Excellent. Good.
Thank God the reading batteries have run out.
You know they have a podcast category now as well.
Do they? Yeah. Are we in it?
It's mad. We're not in it.
We're not in it. Well,
we
in which case.
If you can enter next year.
Yeah, I should.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, and they have got like things which are podcasts which are not particularly.
I mean,
they're
that
not, like,
would be the downfall of the Globes.
They're not
it?
Fictional or anything. You might think, oh, the podcasts are going to be scripted ones.
Yeah,
but no,
not.
You've got the Mel Robbins podcast. Yeah. Is that, yeah.
Hello, I interviewed Mel Robbins. She's a fucking legend.
You're one step away from being in the Golden Globes. So it is mad. So we should definitely enter.
Pod night out at the Golden Globes.
Pod
I can
night
see
out.
It.
Exactly, at the Golden Globes.
James, I'll be wearing lipstick.
Can I just say Jason Isaacs has been nominated for Best Supporting Role in the Met. In fact, I'll just do that category because it is good.
Oh,
Ashley Waters, Adolescence, Billy Crudup, Controversial, Morning Show, Jason Isaacs, White Lotus, Owen Cooper, Adolescence, Trammell Tilmer for Severance, and Walton Goggins for The White Lotus.
Sorry, I think
K7 in a meltdown.
Kay has had a meltdown, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Okay,
that's
well,
it. I'm not really
we're
are
dispensing
you sure?
with the Golden Globes.
It was,
yeah, we're
it,
done.
And then we're definitely done.
That was longer than the ceremony. Right, let's move on to a piece of news which I thought was very exciting, which is 16 years after Pushing Daisies came off the air. It may be returning, which is wild to me. The one with Anna Friel. Yes, that's absolutely right. The one with Lee Pace as the pie maker and the excellent Jim Dale narrating. Kristen Chenoweth is in it, Swoozy Kurtz, Hugh McBride, loads of people. Really, really good, weird, fairy tale-y type thing. The narrator in Boat Story always reminded me of the Jim Dale narration.
What channel
Pushing
was
Daisies.
That?
I genuinely can't remember.
Was
it's
Channel 4?
So
was it Sky Channel Boy? Do you remember? Pushing Daisies.
It was on ITV, actually.
Oh, was it on ITV?
Yeah, ITV showed it on a Saturday
Did
night
they?
In a frankly misguided experiment, and no one watched it.
No, oh, no, no surprise. But that ran for two seasons, from 2007 to 2009, I want to say. Really good Brian Fuller show, really enjoyed it. Really, really quirky. Like, the setup, I should say, is that you've got Lee Pace is the pie maker, and he makes pies, that's his job, it's not just a clever name. And basically he has a special magic power that if he touches a dead body, he brings it back to life. But if he touches it again, it dies again. And the wrinkle is that when he brings a body back to life, he has to touch it again and make it dead again within 1 minute, or another life gets claimed. Someone else nearby will just die because death needs someone. So if he doesn't, but so, and Charlotte Charles, or Chuck, his boyhood sweetheart, he brings her back to life and doesn't touch her again. So she stays alive and someone else dies. But the point is, they're in love, but they cannot touch, because if they ever touch, she'll die instantly. It's a really weird, quirky comedy. And like, so they do things like like kiss through cling film and stuff like that. Like, it's really,
okay,
like,
this
it's
is
wild.
Sounding odd.
It is really, really odd, and it's incredibly strange, but it's really good. I really enjoyed it. Pushing Daisies.
Mm. His eyes have lit up.
Yeah, so I'm excited that this may be coming back.
Film kiss,
it may not, but Brian Fuller is saying that they're working on a third season at the moment. Everyone wants to come back. Maybe they'll do it. So
good news.
That would be good.
Yeah, no, it was a really good show. It was a very inventive, unusual.
It was.
Right, now for some news that will be old by the time this comes out, but I just want to cover it off because it's quite exciting for Gogglebox viewers. Tomorrow, we're recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow there's going to be an episode which is for Stand Up to Cancer. And basically it's a Hollywood edition because it's got actual Josh Hartnett on it with his wife, actress wife, Tamsin Edgerton, and they're taking part. But more excitingly for me personally, and I think for Boyd, is that Kieran Culkin... Yes, Roman from Succession is going to be on with his wife, Jazz Chawson. So that is going to be very interesting. Are you fiddling around with the lights while I'm doing this?
I am. I've noticed that the Pilot TV branding in the studio wasn't working, so I've just turned it on.
Okay. As always, concentration levels are high.
So, sorry, could you repeat that, Kay?
Absolutely not.
Kidding, kidding,
absolutely
kidding.
Not. But that's going to be on. So anyone listening to this on Monday, you can check it out on what I like to call All 4. 4ID. It is actually All 4, isn't it?
I don't know.
Boyd, which is
Channel4.com, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just Channel4.com.
Fine. Yeah. So that's some news.
Now, one thing we should talk about very, very briefly, because we did talk about this on Empire, and I think we touched on it on Pilot Plus as well, but the Netflix bid to buy... All things Warner Brothers, essentially, Warner Brothers Discovery. They were in exclusive talks for it for, well, it works out like $82 billion, including debt, doesn't it, for the amount they were going to pay for it. And that was a thing that was announced just after we recorded last week's main podcast. We didn't really get to get into that. But then since then, the new development is that Paramount Skydance, who were the other bidder here, have now launched what can only be described as a hostile takeover bid, appealing directly to shareholders for them to try and get hold of Warner Brothers Discovery. Essentially, that means that Paramount Skydance are now still in the running, I guess, at this point. And it's not a done deal, despite the fact that Netflix emailed all of us, and I don't just mean us, I mean subscribers generally. Ted Sarandos did not drop me a line. To say that they are now in exclusive talks and they're essentially buying Warner Brothers.
Yes. It's very complicated. No one knows what's going to happen.
No.
But it is a couple of interesting things. One is that the Netflix offer does not include certain things like CNN.
No, they're not interested in the news arm of it.
Yeah. Mm. So it's really for the kind of scripted stuff, if you like.
Yeah.
Whereas the Paramount Skydance offer is for the whole fucking thing, which is why it's a significant tens of billions of dollars more. And the other thing to say about it is there's a whole political element to it, because the people who own Paramount Skydance, Larry Ellison and his son, who is Larry Ellison's the second richest man in the world. And he is
occasionally the richest. Like, they go backwards and forwards,
don't they?
What's a few bill here and there?
Exactly.
If you've seen that, the Jesse Armstrong
Mountain Head,
it's kind of all about that.
Yeah.
It's like a Larry Ellison alike character. Anyway, they are right wing pro Trump MAGA people.
Mm-hmm.
And already there's talk about right-wingifying. That's not an actual word or phrase, but I'm using it now.
Right-wingification.
CNN, because CNN is like a kind of bastion of liberal, you know, supposedly objective, but actually, you know, they're fairly pro-Democrat, I would say, realistically. But obviously, Donald Trump hates them. So that's part of the... There's a kind of underlying political turmoil going on underneath it.
When's this going to get called? When are we going to find out?
I think it's going to take...
It will take at least a year.
Yeah, it will take
if
ages.
If not longer.
Well, that's even... I mean, it might be less time than that to determine which of them
wins. Oh, yeah, but for this all to happen...
From then on, there's all the regulatory bodies to investigate.
I just want to know who's going to...
It affects... you know, Europe and everyone's got their own regulatory things in broadcasting, obviously, things, that's a technical term. So it's going to drag on for months, years, but it is, whatever happens, it's going to be, it's going to change the face of the industry, TV and film.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's not a good thing, I think, in either particular regard. No. But because, you know, reduced choice is never a good thing. I don't know quite where it goes. I think there are different risks depending on which party gets it. Yeah. Netflix obviously do many, many good things, but they're not historically huge supporters of the theatrical experience, which is a concern for Warner Brothers' film output. And obviously their strategy for TV programming is quite different to, for example, HBO's. But
what's
I don't
weird,
know. We'll
yeah, I mean, you probably touched this on the Empire podcast, but I think it's completely insane that Ted Sarandos of Netflix fame is not just saying why. Like Netflix is his Netflix. One of their USPs, obviously, is that they put their films in cinemas basically to qualify for awards things, right? And yet they make like Frankenstein, for example. And this is a total film point. I'm sorry, I've got sidetracked. It's a complete visual feast. Part of the whole selling point of that film, a huge element of that film.
Is that
film.
Netflix?
Yeah, it's a Netflix film. And funnily enough, I think Mark Kermode mentioned when he was talking about Jay Kelly, which is the George Clooney film, they told him to go and see it in a cinema, apparently, Netflix. They wanted him to see it on the big screen, a film that 90%, 95% of the people who watch it will consume it on Netflix. So I don't know why Ted Sarandos isn't just saying, obviously, we'll keep Netflix as it is at the moment, with not big emphasis on theatrical releases, but we'll keep all the theatrical releases on Warner Brothers. What's he got to lose? It seems insane to me that he's not embracing the fact that he can have his vision of the new Netflix Warner Brothers doesn't allow for huge blockbuster movies.
Well, we don't know, do we? No, we don't know. He might.
But quotes by him have been pretty negative
about certainly
the
said
theatrical
the
window.
Theatrical window needs to close a little bit, yes.
Yeah. But so this is a film discussion.
It is a film discussion, so we must immediately stop it.
Just cut it out,
and say,
James.
Yeah, to continue this conversation or to continue listening to it, feel free to listen to the Empire podcast from Friday.
I'm going to bring it back to TV quickly.
Go on, Kate.
With the news that Lupin is coming back for a fourth season, which is very exciting.
I love Lupin.
Yeah, me too.
It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. So that's some exciting news for Netflix. Even if it doesn't win this bid.
Have they started making it yet? Are they announcing filming it yet? What stage are we at?
I think they've just announced it,
okay.
I think. Yeah.
Okay, and that's Netflix. And Paramount also have renewed Landman, the new, you know, the Taylor Sheridan show. That's been renewed for a third season on Paramount.
Yeah, I did well. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that the Channel 4 put out pictures of Tiptoe, which is Russell T Davies' new show that I went on set for.
David Morrissey.
And Alan Cumming, host of US Traitors, of course. And it's about these two warring neighbours. It's going to be brilliant. And they're just finishing filming now, pretty much. And it's going to be on in the Channel 4 in the summer. And it's going to be...
I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely fabulous.
And before we wrap up news, I just want to give you some quick news about Stephen Moffat's Channel 4 comedy drama, Number 10. So we found out that Rafe Spall will be playing the Prime Minister, and the Deputy Chief of Staff is going to be played by Jenna Coleman, which is very exciting. And finally, Catherine Kelly has also been announced. She'll be the Chief of Staff. Exciting casting news.
Catherine Kelly, fresh from her brilliant supporting role as Alan Partridge's girlfriend in the recent series, Alan Partridge series on BBC, which I rewatched recently, and is even better, the whole thing, the second time around. And you know what they've done on the DVD Blu-ray release of it? I think this is absolutely brilliant. And credit to Steve Coogan. You know, there's a fan, Monkey Tennis is a fan, I've been on it, podcast about in which they go through all Alan Partridge in iterations, and they kind of go episode by episode. They do a deep dive review. He's put one of their commentaries as a commentary on the official DVD release, which I think is fantastic.
Fully credited.
Yeah, it's like having one of your spoiler special,
on the official DVD.
On the official DVD. Can you imagine? Pluribus. You imagine Pluribus when it comes out on Blu-ray.
Wow.
It's got us banging on about it or something. It's like,
we'd love
that. Yeah. So I think,
we should make that happen. Fingers Vince, crossed. If you're listening.
Yeah. So kudos to Coogan and Partridge and all things that.
Excellent. I believe that's the end of news.
The end of the podcast.
That's the end of the podcast almost. Oh, we should probably review some shows, shouldn't we? Let's begin with The Revenge Club, which we heard about a little bit earlier on from Martin himself. This is the new thriller on Paramount Plus. It is based on the novel by J.D. Pennington, and the book is actually called The Othello Club. But this co-stars Amy Fionn Edwards, Mira Sial, lots of other people in, and they're the sort of eponymous group, the sort of revenge club, and they start out as a divorcee's sort of support group, and they seek retribution upon their love rat exes. Now, Boydie, you do love a love rat. So, do you want to tell us more about this?
Do I?
You do.
Yeah, Channel 5 show, remember?
Oh, of course.
Come
How
on.
Could you forget your show of 2024?
Top 20 contender.
Yeah, exactly.
This has got a great cast. I think Mira Sial, I think is how you'd pronounce her surname.
I apologise.
Who should be in everything. She's a great reminder. She's great in this, and I think she should get way more major TV roles. Great to see Martin Compston in a different role as well from, you know, what we know of him, obviously, in Line of Duty, etc. And the forthcoming
Red
Eye.
Still charming, very charming.
Still charming, but more, I don't know, slightly, it's like a different fit for him.
He's an everyman in this, I feel.
Yes. He's going very high pitch there. Yes!
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is the everyman. Amy Fionn Edwards, whose character Emily is the focus of the first episode, at least, whose husband is having an affair. And all these people are effectively coming together in a support group, aren't they? Being run by Malcolm, played by Amit Shah, of people dealing with the best way to deal with this kind of betrayal and divorce and their partners getting up to no good. What I liked about it is that it's neither a police procedural. It's not a mystery. It's not really a cop show. Cops get involved because things happen. In fact, in the very beginning,
it's a framing device.
There's a framing device of
she's being interrogated crimes, in the first scene.
Crimes have been committed. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, obviously, like as in all of peak TV, you have to have a framing device at the very least. You can't start the story at the beginning.
Absolutely,
it's a bit like I, Jack Wright in that sense, because that's how it started.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what I really liked about it was it doesn't fit into any easy genre. It's not it's not really a murder mystery. I mean, there's crime drama. There's crimes have happened clearly, which is established in the opening framing device, which then flashes back to tell us to fill in the details.
It's a pick and mix of genres, isn't it? It's like there's loads of different things at play.
But the extent to which it is a pick and mix makes it it doesn't easily fit into any of those categories. Yeah, you can have the pick and mix all in one bag.
An assortment, James's favourite.
I do love a pick and mix assortment.
Juicy assortment of treats.
Yeah.
And I think the cast is the key, as I say, that all of these people, I didn't even mention Douglas Henshall, who's really
Dougie
good.
Doogie, as you were calling him, remember?
Doogie Henshall.
When we got over familiar.
Exactly, I think his mates call him, which I am definitely one. I'm not. Shanai Kular, I didn't mention him. He's really good as well. He's the one at the end of the first episode. He wants his case to be the next one they explore. So I thought it managed to make a quite far-fetched idea that these people could come together and kind of hatch a crackpot plan, kind of make it almost believable, or believable enough for you to go along with the willing suspension of disbelief that you need for a story like this. So
it's the characters, I think, that assist with that, because it's fun, like you say, it is kind of crackpot. But because I believed in, like, particularly Amy and Martin Compton's characters, who have this chemistry, right? And so, like, as it's unfolding, I'm like, actually, no, I'm buying more and more into it. And I think that's helped by other characters like Mira, etc. But I just like the fact that one of them anoints them the pound shop Ocean's 11, and that's kind of what this is. And it's just fun and entertaining. And I thought it'd be kind of cozy, like a cozy crime element. But actually, the crime is quite serious, and we're going to have to piece it together as the series goes on. But I enjoyed it, and I like the backstories. I think good character work.
It's like a mix between a caper, because the revenge they take, they're quite elaborate. It's not, some of the stuff is wild, I won't give anything away, but it's quite fun the way they put them all together and how they execute them. That's very Ocean's 11-y. And then in addition, you've got this, it all gets a bit serious, police investigation. So it's the mystery of what went wrong, how did it go wrong, what happened, and who, let's be honest, died as a result of it. So that's kind of there to keep you going, just in case you weren't drawn in by the caper.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
It's a good first episode. Yeah, it draws you in.
It does, yeah. And it does defy, I would say, easy categorization.
Yes. There you go.
That was a struggle for me.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Turns out revenge is sweet.
Yes.
Did you read the official book? Okay.
No, I haven't.
The Othello Club.
The Othello Club.
Did you?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, no, did you read the official book? Kay, because I have.
No, not at all. No, Kay,
he knows Kay I'm an avid books. Reader. Kay can read and does read.
Kay reads books that aren't necessarily set in a world of orcs and goblins.
I don't understand.
Doing magic.
He can't even understand that concept. Understand. He's like, what do you mean other books exist?
Yeah. Well, just saying. But does anyone know why it was called the Othello Club and not the...
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. Well, maybe they were big Shakespeare fans. Maybe they, maybe they started.
Questions without answers,
yeah, maybe they started by like reading Othello. Maybe it was a Shakespeare appreciation.
Well, there's probably you know, an Iago. There was that kind of betrayal
motiveless
going
malignancy.
On.
Malignancy.
Yes, exactly. A Machiavellian character like Iago. Did I study at A level? Yes, I did.
But is, I mean, look, there's always fun to see love rats being brought to justice.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element of kind of think well earned Schadenfreude here because we're all like, go on, get them, yes. Get the love rats.
Yeah, especially the Amy Fionn Edwards.
Oh yes.
Partner, you're like,
you
can. You
are a
shit. Can go to hell in a handcart.
Yeah.
Satisfying.
The Wrench Club, then, on Paramount Plus, who do not yet own Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, you're going to ask me when it's on, aren't you?
I am.
God.
Yeah. Tell me now, Boydie.
Boydie, I'm not being funny. Well, you've had so much information at your fingertips.
I can tell you now without looking at the calendar. It's on now.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
It's on now.
Because it was heavily embargoed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a test. He tested you.
I did. I tested you.
And suffice to say, you failed.
You were found wanting. Next up, we have Amadeus, which is Joe Barton's new show and a series I hold directly responsible for me not having season two of Black Doves to enjoy over Christmas. But I will try not to hold that against it because this is a historical drama based on the 1979 play by Peter Schaffer and fictionalises the rivalry between two great composers, specifically Antonio Salieri, played by Paul Bettany, and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, you may have heard of him, played by Will Sharp, both of whom will be on the podcast next week talking about this show with Boydie. In the meantime, though, Kay, can you be the maestro for this particular show?
Always, I'll be the maestro. Do you know what? So I went into this knowing very little about Mozart. I won't surprise you to know. And as
you're not an avid pianist?
No, okay. No, I'm not. I mean, I sometimes tinkle the ivories at Christmas, but...
An avid what? Sorry.
Lol. But... So good is this, right, that I instantly was then Googling and in that predictable way. I'm a cliche in that way because I was like, oh my God, now I need to know like the backstory and stuff like this. It is very, very well done, as you would imagine. And the casting is great. So as you say, Will Sharp is Mozart. And he particularly, I mean, they're both well cast, the leads. Paul Bettany is great as Salieri because he is very upright and... quite a serious character. He was first on the scene composing and then gets usurped essentially by Mozart. But, and he's creatively blocked. He's a very pious man, creatively blocked, believes that he's been channeling the music as a conversation with God. Yeah. And that's his...
Much like this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, said no one. And so, you know, Mozart comes on the scene. And what I liked about that character of Salieri, so first of all, it starts in a very dramatic fashion because this character is trying to... unsuccessfully end his life, and he has this confession that he wants to make to Mozart's wife. And what I like about it is that it doesn't go down the predictable route of like when Mozart comes on the scene, it'll be easy for Antonio to try and, you know, scupper his efforts to stop him from, you know, having an audience with the emperor, all these kind of things, which he doesn't do actually. He, you know, he's quite open to trying to help Mozart at first, which I thought was interesting, an interesting dynamic. Obviously that's about to change because Mozart is hugely talented and he's a real character. He is
a bellend.
No, I listen.
He's a bit of a bellend.
Oh,
no, listen. He's got
not
shades,
even a bit of a bellend.
He's shades of. He's got,
this is a bold take.
This case tasting men coming to the fore.
No. Look, of course he is, but crucially with him, right? You get right in the scale of bellends, right?
You've got me.
You've got James. No. You've got the bellends who are extraordinary bellends and have no talent, have nothing to back it up. And then you've got the people who are bellends, but they're incredibly talented. Now, it doesn't take away from...
A prodigious bellend.
It doesn't take away from their bellendry, of course, but they have the goods to back it up. And this, I put Mozart in that
category. Do you think
category.
This was a conversation that Joe Barton had when he pitched this show, like the levels of bellendry?
Yeah. Do you support his decisions to go off and compose elsewhere, leaving his poor wife and child? You're fully...
Well... Did he? I haven't got to that bit yet, boy. So that is a very indeed.
Spoiler for Amadeus.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, I've only watched the first episode, boy. Okay. So don't spoil it for me, please. But in this first episode, he is like, he is very, I think he's electric to watch, right? Because he's a live wire and he has got talent and charisma oozing out of him. And he is arrogant, of course. And I mean, some of the scenes, there is a scene where he has, shall we say a liaison with a woman and some
liaison with a lady
and some soft fruit, which is extraordinary to see. It's very amusing. Also, it added a new sign off for me because, as you know, verbally I like to always say to Boyd best or best wishes.
Where are we going with this?
Yeah. But now, Boyd, I'm adding the very brilliant Toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Yeah. Yeah. Toodaloo is Empire Podcast's
Helen
O'Hara's sign off. Yeah.
Toodaloo.
That's why Boydie likes it so much.
Oh my God. No wonder she's a legend. That is an extraordinary sign off. Yeah. So, anyway, yes, it's funny. This is Mozart as a character. He is a lot, you know, he's very amusing. And he is so sort of unfettered and fluid. And he's so sort of free with his writing. That's why he, obviously, this Salieri probably could have great reason for hating him, because he is, you know, he's a master of what he does and he's unrestrained. And that shows up in so many different areas of his life, which would make him seem like a bellend, because particularly with the ladies. But he has this relationship and this connection with Constance. You know, she is his match and she is fantastic. We should say that's great casting by Gabrielle Guerrieri. So, yes, overall, I was very, very taken by this. And I think it's just fun. It's bawdy. It's exciting. It's a smart period romp. That's how I'm describing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly bold, it's the only word for it, decision to do a new version of this story. Because, I mean, partly, I mean, by the way, the all of the press information says this is a version inspired by the original play.
Yeah, Peter Schaffer's play, not the Milos Forman.
Not the Milos Forman.
I mean, I've seen neither plays.
Right, but I've seen both. And the Milos Forman film is regarded by many as one of the greatest films ever made. I mean, I know it's Simon Mayo of Bauer Radio fame's favourite film of all time.
Is it?
Yes, indeed.
Is it one of your favourite? You know, you've got a lot of favourites.
It's got to be one of your favourite films.
It's not in my top 20, I would say.
Every film's in your top 20. So that must be a real diss to that.
Well, I'm just proving you wrong, aren't I? By saying it's not.
He's saying it's terrible, basically, is what you're saying.
It's not terrible. It's really, really good. It's a great film. But I think, so it is audacious, to say the least, for people to go, oh, what we need is, you know, a new version of this story, told across 5 hours, roughly, on television. But
Joe Barton is nothing if not audacious.
Indeed. And what I think he's done brilliantly is he's opened out the world of this story. So you get much more, particularly of Gabrielle Carrivi as the wife in this story. And she gets, and it's kind of like exploring the ramifications of a lot of stuff that you see in the original play and film, but doesn't have time to delve deeper into it. So he's delving deeper into this, into Mozart, the relationship with his wife, all of that, and obviously the rivalry with Salieri. But there's more of Salieri in this version. You know, you get to see his. By the way, it's a while. It's a while since I watched the film, and it's an even longer while since I watched the stage play. But I'm pretty sure that's what he's done, and at the same time, he's kept it incredibly fresh and vibrant, and the casting is fantastic. Because Will Sharpe is, I think, where you're talking about, you know, what level of dickheadery do we ascribe to him? Effectively, what type of bellendery, levels of bellendery? Well, because he is so charming, Will Sharpe, and likable and handsome, and, you know, all of those things. A bit different, interesting, I would say, to Tom Hulce, who's in the film version. I think Will Sharpe manages to make him more likable.
Oh, yeah.
And likability.
Well, he's got a cheekiness to him.
Yeah. There's a discussion about relatability in this, I think.
Who among us can't relate to Mozart?
Exactly. But I think that's, I brought it up in the interview, and they were like, that's more of a question for Joe Barton, which is, they're absolutely right. They said it in a very nice way.
They were like, boy, what the fuck are you asking us about that?
But I think Joe Barton has this bit, where Mozart and his mate discuss, is a story relatable? And I think that's really interesting, because I think, you know, people will say, people did say about Amadeus the film, oh, it's full of horrible people, you know, competing, this essential rivalry. They're both bellends.
Yes. Yeah.
But what Joe does brilliantly in the script for the show is deepen our understanding, I think, of those two and everyone who's in their circle, you know, in their circle of friends, acquaintances, relatives, wives, partners, etc. And what happens to Salieri is Salieri suddenly rejects religion, for example, and goes massively debauched.
What?
This is slight spoiler.
Oh, stop spoiling the show right. for
is
me, this, please.
Is that a spoiler?
No, for me specifically, because I'm so invested.
And Kate
in
likes debauchery and she doesn't want to know that's coming.
Sorry. I did bring up in the interview, which they happily discussed. So certainly it's that much of a spoiler. And then I watched the whole thing because I was in prep for the interview. I like to do my homework. Professional. And it goes places, I think, in the end, like where the original film and play didn't/couldn't go. And it's really beautifully directed and written and acted. And so it's like a real prestige TV project that I think really works. You know, people often complain about people rebooting and reimagining old property, old IP and all of that. It's almost as tired a criticism as it is of actually making something out of old intellectual property. But this is an example of where it totally is valid because it's adding something more to the original. And it's, you know, it's giving us, and it's entertaining us brilliantly at the same time. And the casting down to, you know, the smallest, Rory Kinnear as the, you know.
Fresh, I mean, there's a lot of his diplomat prime minister in that performance. It's great.
But he's so brilliant at it. I mean, the diplomat, he's astonishing. I love him so much as the prime minister. Yeah. He's so horrible and nasty. He's slightly less horrible in this. He's just imperious as the emperor. Is the emperor or
of
king?
Austria?
Emperor,
yeah.
Emperor of Austria.
Yeah.
He would be imperious. You're going to be imperious if you're the fucking emperor.
I mean, if you're a literal emperor.
Yeah.
Can't really get away on that.
So he's slightly less of an absolute total shithead as he is in the series that I keep forgetting.
The Diplomat, yes.
Thank you. I can never remember the title of that show, even though I love it. It's one of my favourite shows. It's definitely going to be in my top 20.
Can you get your tattoo?
Nicol Trowbridge, the Prime Minister. Yes.
So it's brilliantly cast, brilliantly done. It is an absolute gigantic treat.
Do you know when I was watching this, what it made me realise, and I'm going to continue with The Count of Monte Cristo, and I know you guys were very negative about it, and I enjoyed the first episode.
The Euro pudding.
Yeah, but I think what it made me realise is, like both period dramas. I mean this has got such flair and wit.
Yeah,
and
it has pizzazz, you know, to
it. It's like in a different league, and I think that's what I realized.
Yeah, this is a Rolls Royce compared to that Hillman Imp.
I have to be honest, I didn't think I was going to like this.
Oh, why?
I think.
Are you a fan of the original?
Do you know, I've seen it, but no, not particularly. I'm sure it is one of the greatest films ever made, but it's not really my jam.
Were you just in a merry quack and fairy mode?
I think mainly I was like, it was the subject matter.
Genuinely, it was the subject matter.
And it wasn't that I thought it would be bad. I just thought, you know, if you'd given me season 2 of Black Doves, I'd been there with bells on. But for this, I just wasn't really feeling Mozart. Okay, you're fine. But, I mean, it took maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes before I was kind of sucked into this.
Yeah.
Because it started with, you get, like, a framing device. We have a framing device. We get old age Salieri confessing his sins. Before we get into it. But I think, first of all, like, weirdly, it was Rory Kinnear, actually. When he comes in, you know, doing his Nicol Trowbridge as the emperor, I was like, okay, I'm on board now already. And the way Bettany tries to kind of navigate the kind of politics of whether he can do his new opera, whether he has to do the old opera, what language is going to be in, that sort of thing. And then the second Will Sharp comes on, he commands the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is a raging bellend, but he has such charisma and a little cheeky twinkle in his eye.
He's got, how do you say that?
Insouciance.
That's what he's got.
But also, I love that they have like they have a piano off, like a duel between him and the court and a court pianist, and it's just amazing.
Oh,
like
my God,
he's like,
it gets orgasmic.
Oh, I've never been so invested in a musical performance. I was like, God, get him! Like, it was like,
wow,
tickle those ivories.
No, it was like genuinely, it was like watching like two prize fighters going at it, but via their keyboards. Yeah. And I thought that was such a brilliantly staged sequence. And you know, whether you're interested in Mozart period drama, classical music, pianos, there's something just universal about that sort of like mano a mano kind of confrontation, and the fact that they're able to do it through music. Yeah, I thought was
piano duel.
A piano duel.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Dueling pianos.
What's interesting is that, for me, is that there's a whole load of films and TV shows at the moment about male geniuses and their...
And podcasts about that too.
And podcasts, yeah. About their flawed, and particularly ones hosted by you, flawed genius men. wanting to have things their own way and not. So there's this.
Who else?
I feel attacked.
As you see this more, I've seen more of it. So the relationship with the mother and the and etc. The mother, the his wife and mother, plays out more.
Urge you to not ruin any more of it.
No. Then you've got Hamnet, the film, which is about with Paul Mescal's William Shakespeare, who has to abandon his wife and kids to
has
go
to?
Off and write. Well, this is, I'm saying has to.
There's always a choice.
Yeah. And then the Timothy Chalamet film that I was talking about, Marty Supreme. He abandons the
spoiler for Marty Supreme as well.
There's a lot of So there's a lot
my
of abandoning.
My heart is bleeding for all these tortured men.
Well, this is my point: is that it could be it could be seen as a tired trope, but it's definitely a thing, I think. Mm-hmm. And people love films and TV shows about geniuses, and they're often almost certainly people who call themselves geniuses or regard themselves as men. And yet,
two of them in this room.
James knows he's a genius.
Thank you, buddy. That's very kind of you to say.
I aspire to geniusness, but fail.
And I, of course, have achieved it.
But
so,
I think this is partly about that whole syndrome. Male genius Belen syndrome, MGBS. Mm-hmm. I think this, and it does a really good job of exploring. It kind of says if you're presented with all of these brilliant things, like if you're Mozart and people want stuff from you and they're going to literally pay you to do stuff and they're going to love you for it, it's hard to resist that. That's part of the whole thing. And the extent to which you can or can't resist that is explored brilliantly, I think, in this. That's my long winded.
And it is so effortless for him.
Yeah.
Amadeus then.
Amadeus,
which lands not till Sunday, as I recall.
Yeah, Sunday the 21st of December 2025
on
Sky Atlantic.
Worth the wait.
Now, we have very little time left, but we have one more show to cover. Because next up, we have Imposter on Channel 5. And this is an Australian-UK collab created by Neighbours producer Jason Herberson. Herberson. It stars Coronation Street's Kim Marsh and Neighbours Jackie Woodburn, as well as former Home and Away star and Kylie's sister Danny Minogue.
It's what I'm calling a soap convention.
Yeah, it really is. It is the twisted tale of a woman called Helen who refuses to sell her seaside motel. She's a motelier, as we've discussed.
Yes.
She refuses to sell her seaside motel despite the machinations of her scheming family, only for a long-lost daughter. Or is she?
I wonder what James thinks of this.
To pop across from Merseyside, in fact, and slide into her life. Now, apropos of nothing, I think it's a good time to reflect briefly on Pilot TV's mission statement to bring you the very best of cinematic TV entertainment to help you navigate the quality waters of prestige TV. And as I say at the top of every episode, to be your essential guide to every show that matters. Now, I know what you are expecting, what you're all expecting, what you two in particular are expecting, is that I will go on some kind of sneery, elitist monologue disparaging Channel 5's Imposter and perhaps suggesting that it does not 100% fit that description, Boydie.
Listen, it's either this or nothing.
Oh, but listen,
I'm not
going to
do that.
James, own up to the... Why are we doing this? Because everything's embargoed, you know...
You should be thanking me for finding another show to review when there was nothing else on.
If the option was not to do anything and cut this short, would you have wanted to do it? No, because you'd like to...
We could do that. We could literally do that. Yeah. But do you know what? We're not going to. And I'll tell you why.
Because you like to eke it out?
Because I had to fucking watch this. So, Boydie, please tell us about Imposter.
Yes. As you say, it's about a hotelier. A motelier. And she is, she has to deal with her various offspring who clearly want to exploit her and her hotel for all it's worth. They want to sell it off and make loads of money. She wants to keep it because it's basically her life's work. In comes Kim Marsh as the secret daughter that no one knew she had, who's been living in England, hence Kim Marsh's accent, and she arrives on the scene.
This stage, let's remember what the title is of the show.
And now, well, this is the great thing about it. This is such a, it would be a complex web to navigate. Can you navigate a web?
I don't know.
But it's called Imposter. It's actually, funnily enough, it's either called Imposter or The Imposter. I think it's called Imposter in Australia.
And we get the definite article.
We get the definite article.
I see.
Because we're worth it.
On the fifth channel. It's like, is it Channel 5 or is it just 5? It's just 5.
The 5.
It's just Imposter. You know, they don't like other, you know, excessive.
They're grammatically indecisive, yes.
decisive. So yes, there's a character who pops up in episode 3, played by Danny Minogue.
You got to episode three.
Well, I had to because I was writing about it for him.
Oh, this is the new love rat, isn't it?
And yeah. This is the new love rat to some extent. And I was like, when the fuck does Danny? Because there's a Q&A with Danny Minogue in the press pack, etc. And she talks about, you know, all this, that, and the other. And I mean, you can put two and two together, but it's like one of them is an imposter anyway between her and Kim Marsh. I watched this and it's so clunky. It makes Love Rat look like a fucking masterpiece, is what I would say. So, in the press information about, they talk about they want it to be a bit like one of those 80s erotic thrillers, like Basic Instinct. And I was watching the first episode, I was thinking, when's the Basic Instinct stuff going
to
kick in? And
then, sure enough, the finale,
a final scene of episode one includes some intimate scenes of intimacy, shall we say, with Kim Marsh. And it's hilarious. And they are shot in almost like in tribute to those films back in the day. Because if you watch those films like Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct, the erotic
Sliver,
thriller,
90s erotic.
I love that genre.
I have no doubt.
But they are quite camp and over the top and stupid. It's so, you know, and almost self-aware.
It's like Mills and Boone.
Except more kind of adult, more edgier than Mills and Boone. I think Mills and Boone were swoonsome and romantic, weren't they? They didn't emphasise the
shagging. Raunchy.
This is just pure raunchy shagging. But it's shot in such a kind of like ridiculously funny way. It's almost like a spoof of sexy.
Genuinely is.
It really is.
Genuinely feels like something out of Top Secret or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It really does.
You spend any minute like Kim Marsh to like do something stupid, like she's in an airplane or something. So it is shockingly amateurish. And yet kind of mindlessly entertaining, you know, as far as it goes. But obviously, literally the only reason we're doing it, James, to address your point, blaming, there's nothing else on.
Yeah, I felt bad for Boyd, I think.
I mean, you know. But
you know what you did.
It's a TV drama that's running consecutive nights on Five, and that is within our remit.
I'm surprised you haven't brought up the fact, well, maybe it's just me, I struggle so hard with Jackie Woodburn's Irish accent, which is worse than James's, and I didn't think anything was worse than James's accent.
I mean,
it was like she was constantly grappling with it. Sometimes it was okay, sometimes it was off, and it was like so distracting to me.
In many ways, the least offensive part of this show.
I know, but what I found irritating about that, because, well, first of all, I have to say, I'm usually the big defender of Five, Channel Five, etc.
You are.
But in this instance, I can't, because this, I think, is below their standard they should require. But
well navigated.
The issue with the accent thing was, which I found irritating and unnecessary, was like, she could just be an Australian motel owner, right? Why did they have to make her Irish? She could have still, you know, been visiting England and given her child up for adoption. There was no need for this extra hurdle, linguistic hurdle, for her to have this accent. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing more to say, because I think less said, soonest mended.
Yes, I think you're right. The less said about this, the better. So Imposter or The Imposter airs on Five or The Five, depending on whatever you want. When, Boydie?
Today, Monday. I think Monday, yeah.
Not that we're in any way recommending that you take advantage of that information.
Oh, not necessarily.
No.
No.
What did we miss this week, Boydie? What have we not covered?
Do you know what I have got? Because I had to bring the Christmas copy.
Shall I tell people?
Yeah, you tell us.
Okay,
yes.
I can tell you that Season 2 of Fallout comes to Prime Video on Wednesday. We couldn't cover that. It's embargoed until tomorrow, so we're going to be covering that on Pilot Plus, I think. Emily in Paris, or Emily in Paris, depending on how you want to pronounce it, is on the Netflix. That drops on Thursday. And that's the only thing I have in the calendar.
See, that's why.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. Yeah.
Okay. That was embargoed as well, we should say. Yes. Emily in Paris.
Yes.
Okay, that's it. I've got an Empire Christmas lunch to go to, so we should probably call time on the podcast there.
Cute. James getting pissed.
Not invited.
Yeah, sorry, Bonnie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I think you got invited to the after drinks.
Oh, how insulting. Yeah. Oh, my God, boy.
Exactly.
I'd rather shoot you than you went to that.
Yeah.
I would honestly.
Yeah.
I would give you that bullet.
Wow. I might raid the BAFTA screening of Avatar, Avatar stuff and nonsense,
yeah,
as I'm calling it, just so I can heckle James in his intro.
As I intro, yeah.
What I'm so annoyed myself. I'm not going to that screening. I might call up to the last minute move.
So you
as
come
I said,
in and heckle me.
You can just heckle him every week on this.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, but just not in front in the public, in front of people.
Yeah, he wants to do a full Salieri and take me down on stage.
Exactly.
Bring it on.
Okay,
we
that was...
We haven't said our show of the week, have we?
Yes,
no,
James,
that's a good point, right, imposter.
So
right, moving on.
I mean,
so
it's so obviously
have food and drink.
That it's obviously, you know, we don't
100%
even
100% Amadeus. Yes. But I also did really enjoy The Revenge Club.
Amadeus.
Okay.
With bells on.
That was this week's podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave us a review. It's nearly Christmas. Please send us presents. I'm hungry. Please send us cake. You know, any of those things are fine. If you want to follow us on social media, you can. You know the handles by now. And we'll see you on Thursday for Pilot Plus, when we will hopefully be talking about Fallout. And then on next Monday. And what is out next Monday? Let's have a look. What's next week? Oh, it's the Christmas one, because it's the one that goes out just before Christmas. So we'll be talking through a lot of the Christmas shows.
Amanda.
Including,
so
yes.
About
including
that.
Amanda. Well, that may not be on next week's regular podcast. We might do that on the final Pilot Plus on Christmas morning.
I mean, it's very confusing.
It is very confusing. But yes, more on that next week. In the meantime, I'm off to have mince pies and whatever else I've ordered for lunch. So that's good. I don't like mince pies. So that's not true. It's probably a fettuccine or something. I
have to say, of all the intros, that might be your worst.
You really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an outro.
It's an outro.
But yeah.
Really,
oh, intro, outro.
Intro, outro. Shake it all up. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Let's call this off, please. This is terrible. This is why we're not getting a Golden Globe.
This is absolutely the reason. Pilot out.